Let's take our Bibles to 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. We're going to do something unusual today. We're going to continue our study from Sunday school. We went to a certain place here from chapter 17, verse 1, and we're going to continue on. We will start down in verse number 19. We have looked at this morning earlier, and you can go back and view that if you care to, at the introduction of the battle here. We have the Philistines continually encroaching against Israel, and we have, if you will, a red line in the sand. It was actually a brook, but it is a place at least that the Israelites said, we will let them push us back no further from this. We have an agreed upon line, and there is a trench, at least on the Israelite side, an obstacle for defense against the encroaching enemy. A place they had decided to say, this is where we will stop, and we will not let you go any further. And that's where we find ourselves in the Valley of Elah in 1 Samuel 17, 19. Now Saul and they, and all the men of Israel, were in the Valley of Elah. The they is referring to the sons of Jesse, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. They're lining up one against the other in full battle dress, but there is no fighting yet going on. And part of that is because there's a really big guy named Goliath, who is, his head would basically bump the basketball rim. That's how high he stood, let alone his arms, which could reach above the backboard. This man was a giant. And we understand that in those days, often great fighters would decide among themselves that we are going to decide for everyone rather than everyone fighting. It will be you and I, 1v1, to determine who wins. And that seems to be the idea that Goliath had. And of course, the Philistines were happy about that because Goliath was a champion. He had won many times. He had beaten everyone. He was 65-0, whatever his record was. Everyone was afraid. No TKOs, complete knockouts. They were completely afraid and dismayed at how weak they were and how powerful Goliath was. It says, and David left his carriage. Carriage is what you carry. And he carried down the cheese and the bread and the corn down to his brothers in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words that he had been speaking for 40 days, verse number 16. Over and over again, challenging, intimidating, trash-talking the men of Israel. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. Now notice it says in verse 23, David heard them. David heard them. The armies of the Philistines and Goliath. The men of Israel, verse 24, saw the man. The Bible tells us in Proverbs 28, the wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion. The indication here is that nothing was happening as far as the battle was concerned. No offensive were being taken from either side. And yet the men of Israel, when they saw him, fled from him. Verse 25, and the men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter. That we find out that's not such a great prize. And make his father's house free in Israel. No taxes. That's a good one right there. I'll take that one. Tax exempt for the rest of your life. Now, you know the government was serious about this one right here. The soldiers take offense at the defying of Israel. Notice it says, to defy Israel is he come up. And I often have wondered about this. Have you seen this guy? I think he came up to challenge us. I don't know what they were doing, but they were scared to death, so you have to forgive them a little bit. They're stating the obvious. I think he's come up to say we can't win. He's challenging us. And what's interesting, though, is that they did not make any note of God. The offense was for Israel. They were concerned about what enemies would do to Israel. They were not concerned with what God thought. That was no longer even in the picture. Why? They weren't seeing God, they were seeing Goliath. David heard them talking. The men of Israel saw him and they said, have you seen this guy? Have you seen him? Did you see what I saw on the news yesterday? They had difficulty because of what they saw. Because of the constant repetition of what they saw that was being thrust upon them. It was being forced down their throat. The king, they said, will enrich the man who wins. You see, Saul had devised a very ingenious plan for others to do what he was actually uniquely qualified to do. Saul was head and shoulders above all Israel. The man was probably at least 7 foot tall, head and shoulders above all that were in Israel. And Saul yet had devised this plan so that other people would go out and fight the battle that he was uniquely equipped to fight. When spirituality is in decline in a nation, men will resort to gimmicks to imitate the power of God, to try to get people to do God's work. Let me just tell you something. You're never going to defeat Goliath with gimmicks. He's too big. What does America need this morning? America needs us we need Trump to get in the White House, to stay in the White House. We need people to rise up. We need to get connected on social media. We need to go to Washington and march. I am not saying that I would not like to see these things happen. But may I remind you that the enemy is too big. It's too big. Why? People are more committed about evil than they are about good. They are more united together for wrong than men and women unite together for right. So what do? We sit around and say, have you seen what they're doing? Have you heard? I cannot believe what I just heard. And that faux outrage, somehow we think, substitutes for any meaningful action. I just can't stand this country we're living in. I can't believe what's happening today. You're standing around. You're yelling at one another over the fence. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Come over in here. Come over here and see what happens. Get over here. My dad could beat up your dad. My mom could beat up your dad. She beats up my dad every day. We're doing nothing. We're yelling at one another. We're screaming. The battle is being fought here, but it's not actually being fought at all. Because if someone can keep you from actually fighting, they control the victory. Notice here that Saul had done his best to give the people of Israel a way to be blamed.
He did not take personal responsibility. He delegated his authority and responsibility to them and said, it's not my fault. If there's anybody man enough to go out there, I'll stand behind him and I'm going to hook him up. I tell you one thing, he's going to be a happy man if he goes out and does what I should be doing. He realized that the reason why no one was willing to sign up and volunteer on this special op is because Saul wasn't. He had cultivated a culture of fear and inaction. He actually had made his bed, and now he's forcing other people to lie in it. It was because of Saul that the men of Israel were afraid. In verse number 26, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? They had just said it in verse 25. I don't know if it was too loud for him to hear or if he was emphasizing a different direction here, because he says, what shall be done? And he adds, for who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? He reminds these men of their covenant promise with God, that they were the children of God through circumcision. It was a physical reminder to these men that they are God's children. This man is uncircumcised. He's not one of God's. He's an enemy of God. And here we sit listening to this man defy God. He says here, he's defying the armies of the living God. I want to bring your attention to the fact that this is the first time in Scripture that David ever speaks. Through his anointing, through his watching of the sheep, through his playing of the harp, he never says a word. It is at this moment, the single most important moment in David's life, to this point, and I would argue even after it, that David speaks. And when he speaks with confidence. He does not speak with annoyance and outrage. He says, what's going to happen to the guy that kills him? He didn't say, what's going to happen to the guy that fights him? Or, why don't we all get together and see what we can do? He says, tell me about it, what happens after the guy's dead. He's already passed Goliath falling. He's already there in his mind. Why? He knows what God can do. He's not saying, I know what I can do. He knows what God can do. David thinks differently than Saul does. Saul thinks, what I got to do to figure this thing out and hack it and get people on board and do the dirty work? He believes that people are motivated only by selfish reasons. And so he gives a selfish reason for them to go. Hey, I'm going to provide so much money. You're going to have my daughter. You're going to be good in the court. You can come and visit anytime. I'll be your father-in-law. It's going to be great. We'll go on vacations together. It's all about these pleasures that he thinks he would like to have, and so therefore someone else would like to have. But it's not based on anything other than self. David, on the other hand, is motivated differently. He thinks differently than Saul. Saul says everybody's in it for themselves. David says, I'm in it for God. I don't need your house. I don't need your daughter. I don't need your money or your tax exemption. I have God. That's all that I need. That's what I want. And I don't just have religion. I know God is living. I know God is acting. God is working in my life. And I know this. He has something for me to do. God has something for me to do. So I'm not just talking about some ethereal religious figure that we all have back way back in the cavemen dweller time. We all said, yeah, there's got to be something that made the stars. And so we all just kind of, yeah, God. He said, I know God. And I know what God's done in my life, and I know what I can do because of what God's done through me. I want to tell you first, encourage you first of all this morning, regarding the battle of David and Goliath. David, first of all, had to choose his enemy. You might say, choose his enemy. It was pretty obvious. 9 foot 9 inches tall. That's a pretty obvious enemy. And certainly it does seem that that would be, I mean, that's the guy, right? If we could just bring down, fill in, liberal politician, we could make it happen. Right? Notice what it says, verse number 27. The people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his old eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. The reason I said David chose his enemy is because he is confronted with a secondary enemy that is not really his enemy. It's his brother. Now, we know from the previous chapter that Eliab had something wrong in his heart. That's why God passed over him. But we also know that Eliab was the guy that got to go to the battle and not David. And so David is Johnny come lately, and he shows up and he's like, we're going to fight today. This is awesome. And Eliab said, you have no idea what the real Christian life is all about. Let me show you something, bud. When you've been where I've been, and you've seen what I've seen, you'll understand, this is no picnic. And then he begins to accuse David. Now Eliab is not doing anything to advance the war. He's not challenging Goliath. And all of that pent-up energy and emotion, instead of going towards the real enemy, gets redirected to his brother. He said, I know. You see, family can often hold us back with what they know about us. Fellow believers can hold us back by what they know about us. I know. I mean, if your mom were to say to you, I know, what would that do to you? If your brother or sister were to say that to you, what does that do to you? I don't know about you, but for me, it makes me immediately thinking, you know about that? About that? Do they know about this? About that? And it holds me in a place of captivity, of inability to do anything because somebody knows they know. I remember hearing a story about a preacher who had someone sitting on the very front row, and the person was causing all kinds of problems and distracting others and giving other people reason to laugh in church. And so he finally went down the front, and he walked down to the guy, and the guy was sitting down there messing around, and he walked up to him, and he said, I know. And the guy jumped up and ran out, and he had been involved in some heinous sin in the school. It was a school setting, chapel. And he ran out, and he said, hey, they found us out. And it was bad. All the pastor said was, I know. You know, sometimes that could be a good thing. When Nathan walks up and says, thou art the man, that can be a good thing. But on the flip side, sometimes it can be a bad thing. When someone says to you, I know who you really are. Now, sometimes it doesn't have to be a sister or a brother. It can just be yourself. But you're held back constantly by someone who says, hey, I know who you are. The reason I said that David had to choose his enemy is because the obvious enemy was not the one that approached him personally. The obvious enemy was still there, but another enemy stepped in the way, and it was his brother. Look what he says. Why'd you come down here? David, why are you doing what you are doing? Can I tell you the answer? To bring you food, Eliab. That's the answer. But isn't it amazing how someone questioning your motives can make you think, well, wait a minute. Be careful of a secondary enemy. My friends and family, I know that you know a lot of people here in this building, but these people are not your true enemy. They're not. He said, with whom did you leave the sheep? But that's not. You didn't even think about your responsibility, David. You know why? Because you're a little punk. You see how Eliab is assuming a lot of things about somebody. What's the answer? I left the sheep with a keeper. I'm more responsible than you are, Eliab. Why do I say that? Because Eliab, we have a tendency to think that other people are as bad as we are. And we try to make them as bad as we are and hold them to that standard. We think other people are thinking the things that we're thinking. And so then we begin to live this life that we have against the life that we project. And you say, it's crazy. I know it's crazy. We can't just live free and open in the Lord. We have to think other people's thoughts. And now we're living a double life. Here's Eliab saying, what'd you do with the sheep? He says, the few sheep in the wilderness, the few that you have. He said, you just have a few sheep. With whom hast thou left those few sheep? He said, actually, those few sheep are my dad's sheep. They're your dad's sheep. I'm watching the sheep. It doesn't matter how many there are. It just matters how many the Father gave me. And the Father gave me the sheep, and I'm keeping them. Now, right now, I'm trying to keep you alive, Eliab, so I get left the sheep with a keeper. But you see this anger, this emotion that comes and is aimed directly at an innocent David. He said, I know thy pride. I know it. I can see it in you, David. Now, what is amazing about pride is that it is, I think, the original sin. And it's so easy for me to see pride in you. But it's very difficult for me to see pride in me. What I see in me is a heart for God. Just a desire to just be a blessing. But I'm sensing some pride in you. I hate to say that. And I did not even want to say it. But I'm sensing it in my spirit. Some pride. Isn't that amazing? Who had the problem with pride? Eliab. Why? He didn't know the first thing about David. In fact, nobody in the house even remembered they had another son. He's out watching the sheep, and they're like, let's see, red-faced, who was that kid? David. Yes, David, he's out there. They didn't remember him. What do you know about David's pride? You don't know him. See, what's amazing about this passage right here is this is a formidable enemy, and I have to admit, this enemy right here has stopped me many times. This is an enemy of someone that has a tendency to distract from the real enemy. The real purpose of why I'm on this earth is not just to get along with other believers. The real purpose that I'm on this earth, number one, I'm here for the glory of God. And David had the distinct characteristic of having been with God. He said, I know thy pride. I know the naughtiness of thine heart. You know, he could have said to Eliab, Eliab, do you know your pride? Do you know what's in your heart? Don't forget that God said about your heart, there was something wrong with it in the previous chapter, and so he stepped over you. There's something in the heart. You got to be careful, Eliab, because what you're doing is you're projecting on me the lack of growth in your own life, the lack of power as a soldier, the lack of action as a man of war. You're projecting it on me, and you're telling me I'm not what I'm supposed to be. We've got to be careful in my life. I know for myself, when I get mad, any tool to hand after any person to hand. When you get irritated and mad, it's easy to say, hey, I'm sick and tired of this mess. I'm sick and tired of not having to have breakfast or have supper. I never get to shop. I never get to get out of this house with these kids. And we just explode. Any tool to hand at any person at hand. He said, I know. You came down to see the battle. David could have said, what battle? There's no battle. Nobody's doing anything. Sitting around. Come down to see you stand around. Yes, you're right. He could have been sarcastic and say, boy, this is amazing to watch you stand here. This is really nice. I wish I could stand around in the army too. You see, small, envious, immature people must always belittle others' accomplishments. You can't blame Eliab, because Eliab had learned very well how to put people in their place. He learned it from his commander named Saul. He learned to tell people what can't be done. Saul was an expert at telling people what could not be done. Verse 29. And David said, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause? Isn't there a bigger enemy? Isn't there something bigger than this interpersonal squabble between you and I, Eliab? Isn't there something that God wants to do with our nation?" What had David done? I'll tell you what he had done. He had brought down food. What had David done? He had tried to inspire people to fight the real enemy. That's all he had done. Someone said, "The person who simply does what's right with a pure heart will look manipulative, scheming, showy, and self-centered to the cynical. But he simply has a vision that the others do not have." David had a different worldview. He chose his enemy, and it was not his brother. He won this victory with his brother by humility. Watch what he does. Verse 30. "And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner." You see, the real battle was not with Eliab, it was with Goliath. David actually won a victory against criticism and against his own tendency to respond before he ever stepped on the battlefield. We have to win the skirmishes if we're going to win the war. We all think, one of these days, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I am sick and tired of the devil. And I'm going to roll them up. And God's going to give me a chance to wind it on up. And I'm going to take him out forever into the lake of fire. You know what? What about the little skirmishes along the way? What about the little battle between you and your spouse? What about the little thing between you and your parents? We all want to do a knockout punch at the devil. What about being nice to other people around you? What about learning to work on your personality? What about learning how to tithe? What about learning how to read your Bible and pray every day? We want this great victory that people will finally say, "Oh, now that's a Christian." I'm going to go out on a limb and say, ain't going to happen. Why? David didn't wake up in the morning saying, "Goliath, here I come. I'm sick and tired of that." He didn't even know he was down there. His dad sent him down there. He finds out. He's like, "Whoa, that's a big old boy. What's he doing?" And they're like, "Here's what he's doing." "What are we doing about it?" "Nothing." "Why not?" David's right in the middle of it. He didn't wake up expecting to fight Goliath. He woke up expecting to fight the sin in his own heart. And he did. And not only did he fight it, he beat it. And he did that on a regular basis. David is fine with obscurity and he's fine with the limelight. Why? Because it's not about David. It's about God. What does God want to do in your life? No. Not the way we normally think. What do I want to do with God in my life? No. What does God want to do with me? Where do you want me, God? This is me with God, right? You say, "Well, I don't want to be an idiot." Then you can't follow God. Period. Unless you're willing to be an idiot for God, God will not use you. I did not say you intentionally try to make yourself stupid in front of people. I did not say that. You will feel like an idiot to yourself. Because God will humble you and bring you down. You will feel weak, worthless, youngest, not even able to be in the army. But God gets the glory. It's an amazing thing that God is doing in this chapter. He's showing the best the world has to offer and the least of what God has to offer. And God says, "We'll be fine. Watch this." God has no problem taking you, the weakest, the unknown, and accomplishing the greatest battle with you. Why? Maybe, just maybe, he'll get the glory. And you can walk away and say, "I have no idea what happened. I was standing watching the sheep, and now I'm throwing something at a giant, and everybody's picking me up and carrying me around." What an amazing God. Spurgeon said, "We have not sufficiently noticed that immediately before the encounter with the Philistine, he fought a battle which cost him far more thought, prudence, and patience. The word battle in which he had to engage with his brothers and with King Saul was a more trying ordeal to him than going forth in the strength of the Lord to smite the uncircumcised boaster. Many a man meets with more trouble from his friends than from his enemies. And when he has learned to overcome the depressing influence of prudent friends, he makes short work of the opposition of avowed adversaries." What does that mean? You learn to get some personal victories here through humility. "He turned from him toward another." And what did he say? He spake after the same manner. He didn't change the message, he changed the audience. Maybe the thing that God's doing in your heart needs to be directed to a different person. He changed the audience. And then we see in verse number 31, "When the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him." What was the problem with Israel? Heart failure. They didn't have the strength of or the courage of their heart to meet the adversary. He said, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." By the way, he's not asking for anybody to go with him. He's not asking that Saul give him anything. In fact, I better put this back on so you can respect me. He's not telling Saul how to do his job. He didn't say, "Now listen, let me tell you a little something." He took personal responsibility. Young person this morning, may I implore you to take personal responsibility in your life? Stop looking for your parents to fix it. Stop looking for somebody to give you a job. Stop looking for someone to start treating you right. Stop looking for people to start understanding what you're going through. Take some personal responsibility. Hey, single mom, single dad, stop waiting for things to be fixed for you so you can start serving God. Take some personal responsibility on yourself and say, "I hate how this life has ended up right now. This stinks, but I am going to do something about it. Nobody else is going to go with me. I don't need anyone else to go with me as long as God is with me." Hey, mother of multiple children that are driving you off the edge of the cliff, up to the cliffs of insanity, let me encourage you to take personal responsibility for where God has placed you right now. Hey, father, trying to make ends meet, never have enough money to take care of. Take personal responsibility. Stop blaming your parents for not training you. Stop blaming this culture. Stop blaming the situation. We take some ownership of your life and say, "Thy servant, God, will go and do what needs to be done." Stop waiting for some magic evangelist to come to your street and win them all to Christ. Take personal ownership of your street and say, "By God's grace, thy servant will go and fight with the devil on my street. Thy servant will fight with the devil in my home. I'm going to take some ownership." Why? I know what God can do. I've seen what he's done. So he says here, don't worry, I got you. Verse 33, Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. For thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." Here we see the second enemy. David had to choose his enemy. The first was his brother. The second was his leader. That is not his real enemy, but it seemed to be so. Thou art not able. Saul was an expert in knowing what could not be done. Saul knew there are some things that can be done, and there are some things that simply cannot be done. The problem with that is that if that mindset comes from your leader, it's very debilitating and discouraging. If you hear someone say, "I'll tell you what, you can't do it, can't be done." If your boss tells you what cannot be done, you think, "Why even try?" If your husband says, "No, it can't be done. Nope, nope, nope." It feels very discouraging. Here's Saul saying, "Thou art not able." Saul knew he was an expert what couldn't be done. Why? Because he was the original "it can't be done" guy. He was the first one off the line. He knew what couldn't be done because he hadn't done anything. He sat under the pomegranate tree. I like what Henry Ford said. "I'm looking for a lot of men who have an infinite capacity to not know what can't be done." That's why we drive cars around today, because of guys like that. Saul is nothing more than an opportunistic politician. He sees things from a materialistic, natural man position. He sees the impossible. Why? Because everybody knows. You tell me. You tell me when you saw a giant killed. David said unto Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, took a lamb out of the flock." Notice he says, "Thy servant." He didn't say, "I'm the next king, Saul, so let me just tell you something here. I've been anointed." Okay, I think we all know that. He didn't get caustic and cynical. He didn't fight for him. He said, "Thy." He refers to himself in the third person. How's that for humility? "I'm just nothing more than your servant, but let me tell you something of what God has done in my life. I remember one time that there came out a bear and attacked the sheep. And I went after the bear, and I grabbed the bear by the beard, and I killed him. And then there came a lion, and a lion came out, and I went after the lion." You see, I'm not concerned about the enemy, I'm concerned about the flock. It doesn't matter what enemy comes. It matters, is the flock in danger? And if the flock's in danger, I'm getting up and I'm going out. And so he does. By the way, I had to couldn't help but think about the lion and the bear in the book of Revelation and Daniel. We know that Goliath is a type of the Antichrist. In the book of Daniel, it's the same, chapter 7. And he's recounting the story, and he said, "I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." What we find here is the enemy was not what seemed to be the enemy. The leader of David said, "It can't be done." But David did not get distracted by that. David did not get sidetracked. Let me ask you this. Are you upset because of your leader? Is your authority what really rankles you? May I remind you, that's not the real enemy. The real enemy is not the person that's in authority over you. The real enemy is Goliath. And you can get sidetracked and mad at your parents for not doing what they're supposed to be doing. You can get upset at your boss at work and say, "It just doesn't seem right." You can get upset at your pastor. You can say, I just don't think that's right. That's a wrong spirit. Let me just remind you, your enemy is none of those things. The real enemy is Satan and the flesh and the devil and the world. That's the real enemy. You see, sometimes as a believer, we don't receive the victory that we would like because we get distracted by secondary enemies and we focus on them to the exclusion of God's will. What does God want you to do? Are you sidetracked? David wins this battle against a discouraging and depressing leader through recounting personal victories. As discouraging and depressing as Saul was, he could not remove from David the experiences that he had in his head. He knew what God had done for him. What's God done for you? Can you remember when he saved you? Can you remember when that family member you've been praying for so long and your heart was just pouring out to God, "Please save him," and God saved him? Can you remember when you struggled with that one vice, that habit that you knew was going to drag you down the rest of your life, but God gave you victory over it? Do you remember that? Do you remember seeing that Sunday school class grow when you begged and pleaded, "God, please help me"? Do you remember when God gave you an opportunity to minister for him? A victory. Do you remember when you prayed for that young person or that elderly lady to be healed and they were? It's amazing the victories God has given to you in your life, but you have to go back and recount them occasionally. And you have to say, as discouraging as it is right now, and as boxed in as I feel, I want to fight, but nobody in the army wants to fight. I want to fight, but the leader of the army doesn't want to fight. Nobody wants to do anything about this, but I remember what God did. I remember my personal victories that came through trusting in the Lord. You have to go back, and you have to think about what God has done. By the way, this is the only time that Saul mentions the Lord. He says, go and the Lord be with thee. I think Saul's listening maybe to a church service on the radio, and he starts to get a little convicted when he hears Just As I Am playing. He's like, yeah, the Lord can do it. David mentions the Lord 8 times before this. Saul manages to choke it out one time. Why? Because when you're living in that realm of fear and no faith, God is very, very distant. And giants are really, really tall. But when you're living in a life of faith and trusting in God, God is gigantic. And all the problems of this world just seem to be less. Ask yourself, which one are you? Saul or David? Saul armed David with his armor. And he put a helmet of brass upon his head, and he armed him. Also, he armed him with a coat of mail. Now, Saul wouldn't go, but he knew the best way to do it. Saul was willing for other people to use his armor because he wasn't using it at the time. By the way, those who can't teach. He wanted to dress David up to look like Goliath as much as possible. Why? Because everybody knows Goliath's top of the heap. I mean, that's how they do it in the corporate world. I mean, let's just face it. That's the best in the world, the best and brightest. That's how they do it. And so he dressed up David as much as possible. We can imitate him. We can be like them. We can do that. And by the way, a lot of churches do that. A lot of churches do that. They say, we can look like the world. We can do what the world. What does Disney got? What do they do? We can do that. Yeah, no problem. What does Vegas do? We can get people in. We're just going to change things a little bit, make it exciting, make it a little bit more. I mean, let's just face it. Ain't nobody going to listen to preaching. Well, I mean, if you already believe that, you're not going to preach. I can tell you that. So you pretty much fulfilled your own prophecy at that point. I still think people like to hear preaching. All different kinds of preaching. He wanted to dress them up, but here's the problem. Saul was a 52 long, David was a 36 regular. It just didn't look very good. Looked like, you know, he was a freshman going to the first prom that he'd ever been to. Outsized clothing, not quite the perfect fit. And what I think is interesting about Saul is that he's trying to put his armor on somebody else. Do we do that to other people? Constantly trying to fix their problems by saying, well, I'll tell you what I think you ought to do. Here's what you should do. I think here's the right way to deal with this. If you're not careful, you're just a mouth constantly saying things because you have to say them. That was Saul. But God provides unique weapons for each of his children. This is a comforting thought. To know that David was about to go into the battle against the worst possible enemy, armed with one thing that these other guys don't have, a sling. They had armor, they had helmets, they had swords, they had spears, but they didn't have a sling. Why? God knew what he could do with David's sling. And may I say to you this morning, God knows what he can do with you. Other people may not know what God can do with you, but that's okay. God has armed you. God has given you a unique weapon to wield against the enemy. And by the way, that enemy is Goliath. It's not your brother, it's not your leader, it's the devil. He has given you something. You say, well, who am I? I'm not called to preach. Are you a child of God? If you're a child of God, you're wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And he has given you a weapon, something that you can do in your life to wield against the enemy. David girded his sword upon his armor, and he attempted to go, for he had not proved it. David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. Put them off him. I am not using that. David, number one, chose his enemy. David, number two, chose his weapons. David decided, this is what I will use, and this is what I cannot use. And by the way, there's something about Saul and garments. I don't know what his deal was. He had a problem with his wardrobe. Saul had this thing where he tried to rip Samuel's garment off, and then David cut Saul's robe, and here he is trying to get David to wear his armor. I don't know what's going on with him. Chapter 17, verse 40. David, he took his staff in his hand, chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. He chose what he knew. He chose what he had used. God had given him victories in those areas. Let me encourage you. What victories have you ever had in your Christian life? Young people, listen to me. Have you ever heard the voice of God? Have you personally ever heard the voice of God speaking to you? If you have, you know what that means? God has something special for you to do. I may not know what it is. No one else here may know what it is, but God knows, and that's why he spoke to you. What does he want to do in your life? You know what David didn't know about? He didn't know about battles and wars and armor and swords and all, but David knew about slings. He had a sling. David was on his own in the back 40 practicing with that sling. And they say that those sling stones could go so fast in Roman times, they would actually liquefy the metal. They would throw lead stones, lead balls at the enemy, and it would literally morph the surface of that ball as it went through the air. Such velocity that they threw. The Bible says there were men of Benjamin who could sling stones at an hair's breadth. They could put it right here on your sideburns. They could give it a little shave. And that's the power and the skill that David had. Where did he get that? I can tell you this. What David had with God, he did not get playing video games. He did not get watching cartoons and TV. David got that from time with God. How do you get time with God? Let me teach you how to do this, kids. You know this already. The adults, they're too far gone. I'll teach you how to do it. You sit down with a Bible, and you say this, God, I want to hear your voice. Will you speak to me? And you read. And you put your finger next to each word. It helps sometimes. And maybe you read a verse or two verses or five verses or a chapter. And then you know what's going to happen? Probably nothing. And then you go back the next day and you say, God, would you speak to me? I'm talking to little kids, adults. Kids, we can do this, okay? God, will you speak to me? And then you start reading the Bible. And if you do that for 7 days straight, you may hear from God. Or you may have to do it for another 7 days. You see, God is not a magician. God is not a genie in a bottle. Like Aladdin, where you rub the bottle. And God says, what can I do for you? Being a Christian, being a child of God, is me saying to the genie, what can I do for you? And so I get the Bible and I go and I sit down there and I keep going back every day and every day and every day, just like he had to practice over and over and over and over and over again until he could hit that target every single time. Not as fast maybe as a rifle, but just as accurate. He could hit it. And one day God says, hey, bring your sling over here. Wow. See, God's going to use what you're doing consistently. God's going to use what you know how to do. You say, well, I don't know how to do anything. Then start something and do it until you're awesome at it. And keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. I guarantee you God's going to use it. And can I tell you this, kids, as well? Some of you may not realize this, but God has put a couple people in your life. Typically, it's a mom and a dad who are going to make you be good at something, whether you want to or not. And that's God's way of helping you have a sling to use in the battle. If you'll listen to your parents, you might hear the voice of God someday saying, that's why I had you do that. And so we have David with his five smooth stones. Some have said that that was for the Goliath, the giant, and for his four brothers. He was ready to rumble no matter what happened. He knew about brothers fighting, and so he was ready. Notice it says, the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. Goliath despised David because he looked clean cut. David, by the way, never criticized Goliath's appearance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? That's David's staff, the stick that he was carrying, his shepherd's staff. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Goliath was concerned with being personally disrespected. David was motivated by preserving the glory of God. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. This is a big young man. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee with a sling. No. He said, I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver me into mine hand, deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that David is a mighty warrior. Oh. All the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Nobody else knew about the God in Israel. Nobody else was considering him or thinking about him, but David was. How many Davids do we have here this morning? How many of us are standing around talking about the big Goliath? What in the world? What are they going to think of next? This is ridiculous. How many Davids are going to think about God? What can God do? What ought to be done? What has God given me the ability to do? What can I do for God? God, what will you do through me? How many Davids are here this morning? Verse number 47. All this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. The battle is the Lord's. That's the secret of David's life. That is the secret. He was unintimidated by his enemies because he was not fighting them. God was fighting them. The battle is the Lord's. What would you do if you knew God would give you the victory? What battle would you face? What enemy would you challenge? What giant would you run towards if you knew God would give you the victory? Did you see here in verse 46? This day will the Lord, I will smite thee, I will give the carcasses of the host. Over and over again, he is saying, this is going to happen. Are you Eliab? Looking at David saying, I don't think it's the time to be having those visions and dreams. Because honestly, I think the real problem we're talking about here is pride. You realize that pride was the furthest thing in the heart from David. David had a desire to please God. And the people of Israel were so far removed from the concept of God that anyone that thought about God seemed like a proud, arrogant jerk. What are you doing? See, when you try to do something for God, be prepared for that. But listen, I want you to watch what happens. David, when he runs toward this Philistine, he puts his hand in his bag. In verse number 48, David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. He is running, and while he's running, he's taking the rock out of his bag. And here he goes. I don't know how he did this. Now, not only is he running, he's got the stone in the sling, and now he's getting ready to sling this thing while he's running. I don't think he did that without practice, kids. And he ran and he threw it. And what happens? It says it smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead. Nothing like that had ever entered his mind before. Sorry, I'm sorry. An old joke. And he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And all the men of Israel are going, they couldn't believe it. Why? Somebody stood up to Goliath. Not only stood up to Goliath, knocked Goliath down. Not only knocked Goliath down, went and jumped on top of him. Not only jumped on top of him, grabbed his sword and cut his head off. How is that even possible? Let me tell you this. It wasn't possible. It was God. God can do the impossible. When was the last time you believed that? When was the last time you believed God could? You see, the problem is this. We know God might or has or would or will, but what about right now? David said, this day will the Lord. Who's ready to follow? I love this about David because David goes and he goes buck wild. I mean, he's a crazy man. He's playing the harp and now he's killing people and cutting their heads off. He's the warrior poet. He's an amazing balance of two very large extremes. But notice what happens. The men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted. Hadn't heard that shout in quite a while in Israel, had they? There'd been a lot of fear. There'd been a lot of shrinking into the cave. There'd been a lot of blame thrown around. There'd been a lot of attitudes. A lot of people accusing one another and putting fingers in their faces. But now they're shouting, look what God has done. Go get them, boys. Let's do this. And they all stood up and they started running. And they saw the people that they'd been afraid of that morning running away from them. Why? Because God. Not because of David, not because of Saul. The Lord God of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you defied, is now chasing your hind end into the forest. What a God! Wow, that's really, you get really excited. Woo! God is in charge. He's in charge of this world. Not President Trump, not Nancy Pelosi. No one on this earth but God. I don't know about you. I don't think David woke up in the morning going, it's going to be awesome. David's like, well, another day to serve my father, take care of these sheep. And by the end of it, he's holding the head of the fiercest giant in the land. Where did that battle start? Where did that victory come from? Right here. A man after God's own heart. What do you trust in God for? What do you believe God can do? What are you doing about the enemy? David chose his enemy, refusing to fight with his brother, refusing to fight with his leader. He let God bring it to him. And then when God brought it to him, he ran to it. He chose his weapon, knowing that it wasn't really the sling. It was the name of the Lord of hosts. And when God gave him the victory, you know what he did? Look what it says. Verse 54. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. But he put his armor in his tent. David cherished the victory. David didn't waste the victories that God had given him. He remembered them. He recounted them in his mind. Now, I don't know if I can prove this exactly, but if you look at verse 54, it says he brought that head to Jerusalem. You realize that at this point, Jerusalem was not an Israelite city. It was a stronghold of Jebus. I don't know if David got so ramped up and so pumped up, he took that head and he ran all those miles to Jerusalem. He ducked under the fence and he went screaming through the city streets saying, look at it, boys. This is my God. This is what my God can do. And then he hightailed it and left. I don't know. It could be that he brought it to Jerusalem later when he was king. But either way, he had the head. And back when his brothers and his father were listening to him incredulously as he talked about killing the lion and the bear one breakfast, they said, are you kidding me? Who do you think you are? And Dad said, listen, we don't call people liars in this home, but David, next time, bring the head. David said, here it is. God did it, Dad. Eliab, this wasn't me. This wasn't about you and me. This is about God and the devil. And look what God can do. You can bring those victories back. And you don't walk up to your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ or those people that were the irritant. You don't have to, because it wasn't about that to begin with. It was nothing more than about the glory of God. And to be able to say, God did this in my life, God can do it in your life. David enters into a whole new world at this point. But this is where it started. This is where we finally find out what David is capable of. And God gets the glory. Would you bow your heads in prayer with me this morning?